folks, welcome back to another episode of I'm Not Famous, the only podcast that is honest about the fame of the hosts. I'm here with Carrie, as always, and today we are joined by Mr. Matt Campbell. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. So Matt is a comic creator, comic artist, comic writer, comic everything, even a comic professor.
See, that's the part that I really want to know about.
All right.
That's the exciting, like, right? I mean, that is a really exciting part, because as we were talking about it off screen, is that, I think Carrie made the joke, you would have gone to college if you had the option for a class or something like that.
But you made it like, this isn't like a joke class. This is like a real in-depth comic creation. Are you starting off like stencils? Or how does your class kind of set up?
Well, essentially the class begins with what is a comic. Okay. We start talking about things, a lot of the things that their textbook is the, I just drew a blank on the Scott McCloud book. The Scott McCloud How to Draw Comics book.
I think it's just How to Draw, right?
I don't think it's How to Draw. I'll think of it in a minute.
The Guide to Draw, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's understanding comics. Understanding comics. And essentially, it's just breaking down like how comics work, what defines what a comic book is, how to read a comic, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Get the jargon. So that's like week one. And then we get into what is a story and what do you need to have to tell a story. And they have an assignment to like try to tell a short 3-page story. And what I've started introducing is saying, okay, well, if your story works, then we can move forward with it. If it doesn't, then take the grade that you get for that and let's go on to here's a supplied story to do drawings from. Because a lot of the students I found really get caught up in wanting to tell their story, which, you know, makes sense. But that in itself is a whole skill set that we don't have time to dedicate the whole class to. So it's like, well, we talked about story.
We got an English department for that.
Yeah.
Well, what you're describing is almost like a creative writing class.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
versus,
I mean,
like, if this isn't creative writing, this is really how to create a comic, create a great story or a good story, then you can expand it into this role a little bit more.
Well, right, before we go too further, I like to point out, because as somebody, both of us created a lot of independent comics, and giving the students that challenge is great, because if you can tell a good story in 3 pages, you can write a 24-page comic better, easier, because it's to be able to do it in that short of
page. Yeah, in fact, what we do as an example is I'll take a 3 or 4-panel Calvin and Hobbes strip, and then turn it into a 3-page comic and show them what the difference is between that. And essentially, even in Calvin and Hobbes strips, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end, a problem, you know, a goal, a problem, and the result of that, you know, challenge. And when you make it bigger, whether it's making it 3 pages or making it 24 pages, it's just about adding in more information and more details and maybe even a few more hurdles for them to go over. But that's about it, you know. So a lot of times, though, they can't quite figure that part out. We say, okay, well, you gave it a shot. Let's move on. Here's a new script to work from. Now we're going to talk about panel layout and how to make this panel jive with this panel and make it flow across the page. And the way the class is structured is that we focus heavily on that part the most at this very rudimentary stick figure level. And if they can get it to where it flows and makes sense, then I don't care if they go and they find an image on the internet that coincides with their shot and traces right over it, as long as it all makes cohesive sense. Because a lot of them don't know how to draw all that well yet.
That's why I write.
Yeah, so as long as they can get the general understanding of how flow works and how, you know, these panels have to connect to each other. You can't just randomly draw pictures.
Well, that's so important because, you know, comics are a visual medium. And so the majority of the story is probably even told with how your eyes move across those images. Because Saga's a great example. I love Saga now. Everybody loves Saga. It's one of the best things out there. But you could go 3 or 4 pages where there's maybe just, it's the little girl from the future. She's kind of narrating it. Mm-hmm. So she'll have like 2 narration blocks like across 2 or 3 pages that are just like some of the most powerful things you see. And it's because the images that go through it with it make that difference.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, good exercises to start with are to like just try to tell simple stories. Like one of the things that I've done before, I actually learned somewhere on the internet from another comic book artist, to say, I want you to illustrate how to tie a shoe without any words. And then that breaks down like the understanding of, all right, you gotta. His wheels are turning.
He's like, I've got this. He's
wearing Velcro shoes too, by the way. He doesn't know how to tie shoes.
One, everybody knows that I talk a lot, so by the way, I can't use words.
Okay,
I'm done. I'm out. I'm out.
Okay. But that's a good. It's kind of like though when you go to like debate, or not debate, but what's the one where you're forensics, and it's like. You have to do a good speech on how to make a peanut butter jelly sandwich. Just something really simple, but it makes you
really
think.
Why would
really
you do that think. In forensics?
Was it what's it? The
forensics is like...
Speech class. That's
okay.
That's totally not these complicated things that I'm talking about. Just your basic speech class.
I was hoping you caught it. Like, I do that in most job interviews. Like, how do you put on a coat?
And
I'm like, seriously? Like, if you don't know how to use a coat right now, I don't have to teach you, right? But I think it goes back to your point. So, but I want to get into one thing that now going into what you just talked about, at the end of the class, it seems like you also like try to publish some of these as well, right? So you talked about how at the beginning, it seems like in the very basic, create this small thing. Mm-hmm. And then from there, let's either expand on it, mm-hmm. or let's reset and do this. Mm-hmm. But then that final stage, mm-hmm. right? So after they've traced it, they've created the graphics and the story, what does that end piece look like?
Well, I wish I had a copy to show with you. Essentially, though, after they've figured out the laying out of the page and they have their story, and I got to tell you, only one or two times in all the semesters that I've done it have I had to supply a supplemental script for a student. Usually we're able to find the problems in their script, and usually it has to do with they've got way too much information. You know, we strip it down to its basics. They spend the next several weeks doing the layout, and then the next stage is penciling. And in that stage, I'm very specific to explain this isn't about the drawing, like the rough draft, the perspective, the anatomy, all that stuff happens in the rough draft stage. Penciling is about line control. It's about hatching, shading, lighting, right? And making sure that your line is smooth and everything. And then the next thing we'll do is inking. We do lettering. And so they get a taste of each step. And then we send it off to the publisher or the printer at that black and white stage. And then while it's being printed, I teach them some digital coloring techniques. So they get sort of a taste of everything from beginning to end in a 15-week course. And then by the last day, so on Monday coming up, we'll hand them the books that they have, and we collect all of their 3-page stories into this one book, and then
it's
I
like
do
an
the
anthology.
Cover. Yeah, and then I usually.
I was gonna say even similar. Is that their passing grade? Like, is it like a rose ceremony in the patch? So like,
you're like, no,
you are now published.
It's like now I have a comic convention in December at the end of the semester. If I'm able to sell your book, you pass. If it doesn't sell, you fail.
But I feel like this should now go right into an economics class.
Right.
You've created something. Now go try to
now
sell it.
Now go across the hall. Go across the hall. Yes,
it's
the next
microeconomics.
It really
at this
should
point.
Be. It really should be because
or
I can't
entrepreneurship
tell you,
at that point, right?
Yeah.
Something
I can't
that.
Tell you how many students really would like to do. Well, what I do, which is, you know, work from home, make comics, that's what they want to do. And they think that, you know, it's super easy. And I'm like, look, even if you're good at drawing, it's not that easy because there's so many other things. Once you have the book, you've got to market the book. You've got to find a way to publish the book and get it out to the masses. And
well, there's
like you said, there's so many
right?
economics.
There's a writer, there's an animator, there's a publisher.
Yeah, unless you're
there's
dumb like me and you try to do everything yourself.
Well, speaking of doing everything yourself, so your baby, Mythica.
Yeah.
I believe it was the last Kickstarter was just this past summer, right?
Yeah, a couple months ago.
Or just a few months ago.
Yeah.
Project Nerd was there for it.
That's
but,
right.
But, you already sent out the digital copies.
I did.
I have to admit, I haven't read yet.
We could have talked about it.
See, I know.
It.
I should have. I failed.
I
failed.
I sent you one, you didn't
but anyways, Mythica. So why don't you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Mythic is about demon hunting in World War One. It follows a group of individuals that
you were sold right away, right?
Yeah. Demon Which part? Hunting demon hunting or the World War One?
I mean, I would have read either one separate, but now you put them in together. I'm like, please let me know this branches off into one and the other, and yeah. It just keeps going.
Well, it does. It's a universe that I'm creating, and essentially. The first six issues, which I'm collecting right now, that's what the Kickstarter was for, kind of set the stage. It's the first volume. And it introduces a lot of characters. And they don't really, none of them know each other. But they all have started to, like, manifest abilities as they've been attacked by demons. And the abilities came in sort of like a desperation move. And suddenly they're like, oh, well, how'd that happen? You know? So they're trying to figure out why they have abilities, how to use these abilities, and so we're learning what that's all about in the upcoming books. But then also they're trying to deal with these demons while there's a world war going on. So very soon the problem,
you thought your life was complicated,
right? Very soon the problem will become that while they're running around trying to stop these demons, the leaders of these world of these different countries realize there's people out there with abilities and start hunting them down. So essentially, they're going to get hunted by the people they're trying to save.
During the war?
During the war. So there's, you know, they'll...
Do you create, maybe this is a question that maybe is better shown than talked about. Mm-hmm. Is there a blend between World War One and, you know, countries versus this universe? Or is it, they're in World War One countries, and it's just like the same
visual
of what you would see. It's not like a universe, it's...
Well, it's a very alternate, not really alternate, but it's very, try to keep it as realistic to the time period as possible. For instance, I've got a character in there who's sort of a mechanic, and I want him to, like, retrofit cars and make them sort of rat-rodish, you know, steampunk cars, but the rule is always they have to work in the means of the time period.
Gotcha.
So, for instance, we've all seen the T-Bucket Roadster with the big, fat, wide back wheels. Well, they didn't have those big, fat, wide wheels back then. They only had the thin ones. So either they're going to have to stack three or four of them wide in the back to get that same effect or something else, right? So a lot of the time is spent designing within that universe, but by adding, like, a fantastical element to it.
I think that just also puts the punctuation on what you were talking about for the comic class on... It's beyond just the drawing or the
you like just gave all the sales pitch right there.
Just right there into that one issue. Like, it's so much effort goes into those things. And people miss that because they see, oh, you drew three panels on this page.
Yeah.
You can draw this in 5-10 minutes. Why isn't it easy? Why isn't this? And it's like, well, all the effort that took going into it. And like you said, then I have to sketch it. I have to, you know, and it's true. You don't want to create a comic without that initial thumbnail layout first. Mm-hmm. Then sketch, like, all the steps ends up,
well,
all that effort into one page.
Yeah, and that's why I learned over the years that, you know, there's a reason that comics have multitudes of people, because each person has their skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, I love world building and telling the story visually and drawing, and I'm really, I think my strongest skill set is the layouts, the panel layouts, and how to choose the right shots and make everything flow together. But a writer will, you know, take the universe and make sure of those little details, like what universe we're in and so on and so forth. And I've worked with some great writers on Mythica. I had both William Tooker and Meg Brubaker both have worked on the book at different times, and both added some really great elements to the story. Going forward in the future, I definitely plan on hiring a colorist, because I did all the coloring myself as well, which is a whole nother job. But I mean, when it comes to world building and the details, like, I even went so far as to I ended up hiring a guy in Scotland to be my dialect coach, because I have one of the main characters is a big Scottish dude in a kilt, which is kind of why I started this whole thing, because I wanted a Scottish hero. But when I was trying to do the dialect, he got a hold of it over the internet and was like, your dialect is all over the place. Sometimes it's English, sometimes it's Irish, sometimes it's Scottish. So I send him the script and he sends it back as it would be said in Scottish. And then sometimes I have to dumb it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But at least I know how it's supposed to be said.
I was really hoping that you were going to say it was going to be animated. And it was going to be made into a cartoon.
That's
I really thought when you said dialect coach, I'm like, you're voicing one of the actors, and this is going to be like available for streaming.
Well, that's my editor for when I've written stuff is the guy behind this. And that's the thing. He'll come back and be like, go watch an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer right now. You're trying to write teenage girl. Go watch an episode of Buffy. Go watch this right now. And I'm like, fine. Like, he's like, you're going to change this dialogue. Go watch this. I do too.
Well, and to answer your inquiry there, when I first thought of telling this story, my intention was like a trilogy of films.
Right.
So we just released the first, or we're releasing the first book, collects the first six issues, but like all together, it's would probably be like 9 or 10 books to tell the whole story.
And then is this from young there, adult kind of stuff? Or
it's definitely for a mature audience.
Okay.
I mean,
there's a lot of blood.
I mean, take Supernatural, which is a huge influence, the show Supernatural, a little bit of Firefly. But the thing about Supernatural is they were on TV, and you'll notice like a lot of the demons are always looking like humans. And so with comics, we don't have the restrictions of having only human, you know, not having special effects makeup. I can draw whatever I want. So we wanted to draw like lots of creatures, lots of gore. It's kind of sexy sometimes. There's definitely language.
But it's
language.
Also like a period piece too. So I don't think you would want it to be too out there, right? Like this is World War One era.
Right.
Like, I think you want the same colors, the same blend of materials during that period of time, right?
Right. So yeah, that was another challenge when I first started. Was I was kind of just winging it, you know. And I ended up doing a really tight penciling and then coloring it myself. And it kind of got sort of an Ultimates 2 Joe Madureira kind of look, where we colored right over the pencils. But going forward into the next book, I definitely want to hire an inker so that it gets a much darker, like Batman-esque kind of feel. And then I want to also mute down the colors a little bit more so that it gets a little bit more gritty feeling.
So, yeah, you want like that, like the grays, the blacks.
Yeah,
I feel like
yeah.
you want to feel not only like see the depression in certain architecture, but also like feel it in the colors.
Yeah.
To go to blend into the story.
Well, I also over here, I know he is. Good.
I'm sorry, like off. I'm not
like
read
yeah,
it.
You're like
he hasn't even
right,
seen it yet.
Yes. Let's see.
Well, I'll put my turtleneck out right now. Dude. I'll full Roger Ebert.
I actually do agree with that, and that's why going forward, I wanna you know, desaturate the colors and then save the bright colors for like the special effects kind of stuff so that they stand out a lot more.
Yeah.
The magic and the demonology and all that stuff. So, but yeah, it's,
you can take credit for it. I know it was me.
I'll give you credit for it.
Contributor.
Contributor. This will air way after all that's done. He's like, no. Like, I already had it.
He didn't say it till I was done. Right? Exactly. Well, I know before we move on too far with it, but Mythica. You'll have to go to projectnerd.com, obviously. Hit that search box, Mythica review. I believe it was issue one we reviewed way back when. Way back years ago.
Yeah.
So you can catch that review to kind of get a little insight to what the Project Nerd reviewers thought at the time.
Yeah.
But definitely, like you said, now you're six issues.
Well, this book is going to collect all those. So not only is it better for the readers to get on board because it tells a complete story. They don't have to go and like get bits and pieces, but it's also going to be a little bit more, you know, cost efficient for everybody too because it's more compact.
I probably shouldn't say it on an episode with a comic creator, but I feel like I've gone to mostly trades because it's just hard to keep up like on the monthly.
It is, especially as an independent. Like, like I said, most comics from the big companies crank out at, you know, one a month or one every other month, in some cases even bi-monthly, which I think is way too fast. Most people don't want to keep up with that, and I think trades are the way to go.
That was fun to spend my money on that when I was 15, but now I've got bills to pay.
Exactly.
I'm waiting until it's a trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So outside of Mythica, anything else you work on?
Well, besides the school and Mythica, I've also, you know, started a company, Axeline Studios, which is now going to be sort of a publishing house. I know you guys have published some books through, or a book through.
We tried. No, we did. Yeah, we got a few out there.
Through Project Nerd, right?
Yeah, through the Project Nerd name.
Yeah.
I think we brought in a few other publishers. it's definitely, like I say, when you, and we were talking about it beforehand too, there is so much work that goes into this stuff that you don't realize. For me, though, it was always a dream of mine to create my own comic. Mm-hmm. And we did, the most successful one was Billy, which to me worked well. And it, so at the end of the day, we're trying to do volume two this year. But if I don't go any further, I'm like, I made a comic. I'm happy that I got to do something I want. My child version of me would be happy with me right now. And so it was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. So yeah, that company is sort of going to be the basis for starting some other titles. And also, eventually, I want it to be a platform to help other artists out and get them launched as well. So if they've got a story to tell, but maybe it's lacking in the story part or the art part or whatever, we can work together with some other people and like help it get it done. Because as a teacher at the school and just seeing it, you know, at shows, I've seen a lot of people that have really great ideas, but then they realize all the hurdles involved. And what ends up happening is some of these are really great ideas, you know, but they never get realized because of all the hurdles involved. So, and the thing is, what I want to encourage people to do, especially creators, is that what I saw the most often was people would start off with ambitions of, I want to tell a story. I want to create this story that's in my head. And then they realize it's hard. And then they look and they see the guy across the aisle making hand over fist selling prints. Yep. And it's like, well, I want to be that guy. I want to make money, you know? And so they kind of give up on their original goal, which was to tell a story, because mm-hmm. it's not working as fast as...
Well, and those prints cost, I'm not going to say the amount. They're cheap, and then you turn around and sell them for 10 to 15, even 20 bucks at
times. Right.
You got, and you draw it once, and then it's like there.
Well, and that's why it's a nice way to earn money, and I don't discourage people doing it. What I discourage is that's you know, giving up on your storytelling dreams for that, you know. And so ultimately, which it may take time, maybe down the road, but I want to help people realize those dreams, at least the local Colorado community, and just say, hey, you got an idea, you know, yes, there's challenges involved. Let's see how we can overcome those challenges.
And there's a lot of creative people in the Colorado.
There certainly are. There's a lot of great creative people.
And shout out to Charlie over at Dink, like really focusing on that independent stuff too. But we've had a bunch of other little conventions too.
I hope Dink's listening to this, because I think well, I just barely made it in the wire of like applying for their show.
We'll air it before it goes out. So Charlie, or if anybody else is listening.
Yep.
Make sure Matt gets his table in there. Like, awesome. Well, yeah. So, and I know Action Line's over on Patreon as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So you can check. So if people want to support that and help it grow, Patreon's a great way to do that for you.
And with that, what we do is try to not only create content that's only viewable to the patrons. Mm-hmm. In some cases, that's tutorial content. In some cases, it's behind the scenes content of our books, like Mythica. For instance, the whole issue 6 was revealed to them as it was being made.
Okay.
And then the other great thing about it that's kind of unique to our Patreon, at least compared to the ones I've looked at, is that people that sign up at over anything over like a $3 level, we send a comic out to them every like 6 months. So you're essentially getting content and getting actual stuff sent to you, you know, twice a year.
It's awesome.
So, and it's, you know, sometimes it's challenging to keep up with because it's still a small company and mm-hmm. I'm doing most of it myself. And so sometimes I'm like, they're coming, I promise, you know.
I'll drink to that. I feel you. But no, it's some good stuff. Yeah, like I said, we were turned on to Mythica a while back and it's really been interesting. So glad that you got the first collection coming together, and can't wait to see more of it as well.
Thank you. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, with the professor thing, I think it's really awesome with the class too. Is there any way people can pick these up, or are these just printed for the students?
The class books?
Yeah.
The class books are generally just printed for the students.
Okay, so friend a student, and then you'll be able to see one of them.
Yeah.
Friend
a
student. I took that class.
I do generally, I post up the covers, and sometimes if they're okay with it, I'll post up some of their pages, you know, like on our Facebook page or something.
But you also mentioned like a YouTube as well, right? You have YouTube tutorials and other things. Mm-hmm. Do you publish some of the content on there as well, or
not their content? I mean, I might if we talked about it, because I still try to treat their content as their content. So, you know, they'd have to release permissions for us to do that. But yeah, we do cover a lot of stuff in those tutorial videos. And some of the videos are available to the public. Some of them are hidden just for patrons. So, but there you go. Yeah, there's all kinds of content out there.
All right. Well, we are winding down on time. So other links, everywhere else we can find all your stuff
online.
Well,
Patreon is a big one because that one helps keep Mythica going. Mm-hmm. Every bit of that goes towards other colorists and other creatives, and that's how I pay to keep this thing moving forward. Obviously, we just did a Kickstarter, and that book's coming. And so my plan is to have it, it's pretty much together. I'm kind of putting together last-minute printing touches and the ISBN numbers and stuff. Mm. It's going to be available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all these other bookstores, so that'll be nice.
So probably around time this airs, just head over there, search Mythica on those, and you'll have a good shot at finding it.
Well, they're already Patreon subscribers, so they're fine. They're good.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
And speaking of Patreon, you can also head over there and check out Project Nerd on Patreon. We do thank you to our backers as well, and obviously thank you to the Action Line backers. For those of you checking us out on YouTube, maybe you're right in here somewhere. There's that subscribe button. Go right there. Yeah, go for it. Go for it. Push it. Definitely check us out through all our channels. But for Carrie, Iggy, and Matt, this episode, we'll catch you next week.